Hey, good morning. Welcome into In Focus News Radio KMAN. Got a busy show lined up for you here today. Four different segments, and we'll be talking with the Senior Center, the Animal Shelter, and the Douglas Center. But we're going to start things off first, K-State Research and Extension, and Riley County Ag Agent Greg McClure joining us here this morning. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
Pleasure to have you on here. I know you got a lot of topics you want to cover here. We'll get to as many as we can here. We'll just start off at the top of the list here. Well, first of all, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm good. I'm good. Cold weather, I still have memories of that from a month ago. And so still reeling from that. But, you know, I think we've all recovered and enjoy a little sunshine. Really beautiful day out there today.
Yeah, yeah. The temperatures are nice. Makes you feel more optimistic about things. And, I'll tell you what, as long as I've lived here on this earth, I don't think I've ever been as cold as I was in February.
It was a good one, wasn't it?
It certainly was. And that's a good segue here for our first topic here, and this is having to do with temperatures, a lower critical temperature for cows.
Yeah, I realized after I put this together that I kind of have a cow theme today. But yeah, during that cold temperature period, we got to thinking about lower critical temperature for cows, and basically that's the temperature at which they really start feeling it and need more energy. And so with a cow with a heavy winter hair coat, that's about 18 degrees Fahrenheit. And so at zero or minus 20 or whatever it happened to be, they were hurting pretty bad. And so at that kind of temperature, they need about 1% more energy for each degree below 18 degrees Fahrenheit. And so it's really quite a bit. So they there's really no way you could quite get to that point hardly without a little, of course, more bedding and a break from the wind and those kind of things. But the reason I thought about that again this week is because lower critical temperature changes if they're wet. And so if you get a cow wet, her lower critical temperature is 59 degrees. And so at below 59 degrees when they're soaking wet, then they're feeling cold. And so if we get another rain here, I'm not sure what the prediction is, whether we're going to get more this weekend, but you know, we need to still pay attention to that. And if we have those conditions, just make sure that we've got them well taken care of and give them a little more energy.
Yeah, I think our next chance of rain showers looks like Sunday night into Monday, that may be the better chance there. And of course, whenever you have that also leads to problems with mud.
Yep. And that rain put that feedlot mud topic back to the top of my mind, and I think that does for some others too. You know, we've had lots of opportunities over the last several months to clean out our feedlot pens, but people don't seem to really listen. I don't think that it really has an impact until they get muddy again, and then you realize, like, oh yeah, this is a mess. We need to do something about it. You know, and the reason that mud matters is just a little bit of mud, just dew claw deep, and you know, only about an inch, can cause a 7% loss in feed efficiency and gain. You get that mud just a little bit deeper, you get it to ankle deep, and that's just the next joint up, so we're only talking 3 or 4 inches deep, that's a 14% loss of feed efficiency. And then when it gets really deep, you know, we get hock deep, that's 20% loss of feed efficiency and gain in our cattle. And so there's plenty of good reasons to keep those pens clean, you know, aside from what you just would like for them to have a better environment. But that better environment improves profitability. Easy enough when in dry weather to get it done. And really what needs to be happening is to go into those feedlot pens, build some mounds to where there's a dry spot, you know, to where the water will run off and it'll stay drier on top. So that's the solution most of the time. And sometimes it's a matter of moving to a different location. And I'll use the example of where my 4-H calves were housed when I was a kid. You know, the pen was at the bottom of the hill. It was surrounded by trees. And so when it got muddy, it stayed muddy. It didn't dry out. And we really should have just found a different spot. But as a kid, I really didn't know any better. This is what we had. It's the only good pen that there was on the place. And so that's what we used. But there was lots of times that thing got to be hock deep, and so not a good place to have your 4-H calves.
No. Well, how often would you recommend folks getting out there and cleaning the pens? Is this something you got to stay on top of every week or like a monthly thing?
Well, you know, usually it's an annual thing for an actual real feedlot, but it depends on the conditions. You know, sometimes it'll get muddy enough that the feedlots will be out there and they'll be moving manure when it's sloppy. But it really just depends on the conditions. But it's something we ought to be thinking of annually. And most of our feedlots are small feedlots around here, and they're probably just winter holding pens, winter feeding pens. And those could be cleaned up in either late spring or in the fall and have them in shape for the next time when the calves come in.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about breeding of bulls.
Yeah, and again, the cold weather put another topic to the top of our list, and that's a breeding soundness exam on these bulls. And so, you know, that cold can do some bad things. And so bulls are not made to withstand that kind of temperature, and basically what can happen is in that really cold temperature, they could get frostbite on their scrotum and they could be infertile. And so we just need to remind producers that we need to do a breeding soundness exam before we turn the bulls out this year. You know, sometimes you might get a little lax and say, oh yeah, they're going to be fine. But we know they've been through more stress. I have personally experienced that with a bull. Probably that would have been in the early 80s, who stood on the top of the hill with his back to the wind in a really, really cold blizzard, and got frostbite on the bottom of his scrotum. And so we didn't even test him. He was, pretty obvious there was a problem, and he had a bad attitude anyway, so he went down. But I think that there could be some problems with some bulls, and you need to check them out and be sure that the semen is good before we turn them out with cow.
That just sounds incredibly awful.
It does sound incredibly awful, and it looks incredibly awful. It is, you know. And if we could go back, you know, we were so concerned with saving baby calves, and so always worried about them, trying to make sure there was bedding there. If we could go back, we would say, hey, don't forget about your bulls. And a little bit of bedding could do a lot toward helping them out. So when they lay down on the cold ground, again, they've got some insulation, and so they'd be in better shape.
All right. Well,
so when we go back, when it happens again, we want to be sure that we bed those bulls down really good, give them some shelter if we can. If nothing else, get them in behind the windbreak and take a little better care of them.
Okay. I'm talking with Greg McClure here, Riley County K-State Extension. Let's talk a little bit about night feeding.
Now, this is one of those interesting topics that has been around for years and years and years. In fact, from the 1970s. Maybe of interest to some of your non-farm audience. So what we do, and there's many producers that do this, is that they feed in the evening, oftentimes, and this is during calving season, oftentimes 4 to 6 p.m., you know, just before dark. And by doing that, the cattle will be eating late in the evening, and it ends up causing most of the calves to be born during the daylight hours. A study at K-State many years ago resulted in about 85% of calves born during daylight hours. And you'll find lots of people do this, and lots of people don't. Now, the reason that many don't around here is that in a wet year, and it's easier to feed when there's frost in the ground. And so they feed in the morning before it gets really slick. But if you want those calves born during the day, and with heifers, that's usually a better deal. So you can be there and have a better chance of helping them out. Feeding at night really does work. Studies have been done at K-State. They've been done at other universities. You know, and I'm the skeptic. I say, well, what happens if we do something different? Wouldn't we have that many born during the day anyway? And well, actually, I think it's the University of Idaho, right? I did that study 15-year study where they fed in the morning between 6 and 8 a.m. And they had 52% of calves born during daylight, 48% at night. And so, you know, there really is a cause and effect here. The night feeding causes those calves to be born during the day. What's interesting is that nobody really knows why. You know, there are theories that there's heating up of the rumen and different hormones, but nobody really knows why it works. We just know that it does work. Been around really since about the 1970s. You might hear it called the cone fall method. So So it started with a guy named Gus Conefall, who was a Canadian rancher, who reported his observation to universities in Canada, and then they started the research, and lots of people have done it and found that it works. An interesting side note, I realize I'm doing all the talking here, Brandon, not giving you a chance to respond.
That's fine.
But interesting side note, there have been some comments on a Facebook post that I put out there a couple years ago. There's some folks in the southeast United States that don't want to calve during the day because of black-headed vultures, I believe is what it is, that will attack those calves. And so they do just the opposite. Feed in the morning, try to get those calves to be born at night. So, you know, two ways to look at that. But I thought that was really an interesting approach to take for them.
Yeah, no, certainly. That's an interesting way of doing things there. And yeah, it'd be interesting if there's become more science surrounding that in the future.
It'd be nice if we knew exactly why.
Yeah. Well, let's get on the next topic. I know we're running a little short on time here. You want to talk about the limit feeding to reduce calf size and why it's a bad idea?
Yeah, we want to at least hit on that. And so you do, during calving season, you every once in a while you get somebody that said, hey, I'm not going to feed them a whole lot for the calf because I want smaller kids. Hmm. And so I just want to touch on that and say that's a really bad idea. And so, yeah, you can get a smaller calf, but research, again, K-State research done in the 70s, found that heifers that were fed two-thirds of the normal ration, normal nutritional requirement toward the end of pregnancy, had 7% fewer calves born alive, half as many heifers returned to estrus in 40 days, and calves that were 25 pounds lighter at weaning. And so limit feeding to try to reduce calf size is a bad, bad idea, so we don't want to go there.
All right. Well, anything else, Greg, here? I know you got a lot of stuff.
You know, we've covered what I really wanted to hit today. We might just note that I've got a Livestock Association meeting, Raleigh County Livestock Association meeting, on March 31st. And that's going to be A.J. Tarpoff, K-State Extension beef vet, talking about pasture lameness. Not everything is foot rot. And so if anybody's interested in that, they can find that on our website. www.riley.ksu.edu.
All right. Nice to have some in-person events going on here, and those are coming back here slowly but surely.
Yeah, we will observe COVID regulations, so we're going to be careful with that, but we're going to go ahead and do this one.
All right. Well, Greg, it's always a pleasure, and we'll talk again real soon.
Thanks for your time.
All right. That's Greg McClure from the K-State Raleigh County Extension. More In Focus after this on News Radio KMAN.